Welcome to Orchard Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the Orchard community.
I think this has been a very permission-giving series for people to be able to say to them, there's other ways of approaching the Bible. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are. And when you give people permission to approach the scriptures in what I think is a healthier way and more beneficial way, I think there's a real freedom that comes with that. It's like, oh, I didn't know. I was only taught this approach.
Scott Hodge and Anna Hammond, how are you today?
Hey, what's up, Benjamin? Hi, Anna.
How's it going? Hi.
Yeah, glad to have you with us and hope things are well today in Aurora, Illinois. Today, we're wrapping up our series. It's crazy. We've been doing this for little while now. It's been about 8 weeks. And this is week 10 or 9 or 10.
Yeah. I don't
okay.
know.
Okay. I think you're
long enough that we've lost track.
Long enough that we've lost track. That's right. But today we're concluding it, and we're going to respond to a few more questions that we've gotten. And then also we're just going to have an opportunity for us each to kind of go around and just state a couple things about what's happened for us personally over the last few weeks and what we're kind of walking away from this with. Cool.
And I think you should mention, or we should mention, that if you missed the last couple of weeks, it'd be worth going back and listening to our conversations, because we hit some pretty good topics, I think.
Agreed. Yes. You can always find that at our website, theorchardcommunity.com. You can scroll down and you can click on the little thing that says our current series to find our current one. And then, of course, our podcast, Orchard Conversations. You can search Orchard Conversations on any podcast platform and find it and go back through there. So, and I'll make a special note about that little extra plug on that, that we're headed into the summer months. I know a lot of folks travel. Podcast is a great way to stay connected and keep up with what we're doing. And, you know, maybe even have conversations with maybe family or friends that you might be visiting somewhere. The idea, the intention behind it is there are conversations that spark further conversation. So, yeah.
Good.
Anyway, let's dive in, because we got a few really good questions, you know, and actually very practical ones today too. So I'll start. First one says, getting started reading the Bible is a challenge for me. What translations do you recommend? Where do I start reading? Are there any particular reading plans or strategies you all would recommend? Scott,
there's a lot of translations. There's a lot of translations out there. So it's totally, I mean, if you, you know, it used to be you'd go to a religious bookstore, right? And you'd just go to the Bible section. I'm sure they still had Bible sections at regular bookstores, you know, non-Christian regular bookstores. Anyway.
Like Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, right. But you go on Amazon, it's where do you even start? So that's a totally fair question. I'll just throw out real quick. There's a couple translations that are sort of my go-tos. I've been reading the Bible for a long time, but at the end of the day, I need things kind of just simplified. And so for me, I like the New Living Translation, the NLT, because I think it's very simple English. It focuses, it emphasizes, I think, readability and clarity. It's contemporary. I feel like it makes the Bible really accessible for people. That's probably the translation I recommend to people who are new to the Bible. I like the Message, which is more of a paraphrase from Eugene Peterson, who is this amazing pastor. I mean, just humble man, poet, author, etc. But he over a period of 10 years created the Message, and his aim was to New Living, but in a little bit of a different way, to convey the Bible in a way that people speak on a regular basis in their everyday lives. But it is a paraphrase, which means it doesn't stick super close to the wording of the original text, but it does bring in a lot of that nuance and the poetic nuance and the which I think is missed a lot in most translations. Right?
And I think the Message in particular, it's instead of a word for word translation, which a lot of Bible translations aim to do this word for word, he goes theme by theme. So he's thinking thematically rather than word for word, which I think NLT kind of does that too. He just takes it to that next level of translation where it's really thematic. It's really looking for the overarching things conveyed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that the best way to do it is to read a bunch of translations. Honestly, more intensive, but I think because we're dealing with a book that was written in ancient languages long ago and has been translated by so many different people. And I think that it can be really powerful and meaningful to not get stuck into one translation, but read from a bunch. And if you read one, tools like BibleGateway.com make it really easy to, have the same passage and then just look at different translations and see the nuance there. I think that's a really good way to explore.
I like to find the translation that makes the point that I'm trying to make the Bible say.
Yeah, that's really helpful.
Reverse engineering the Bible.
Right.
I just type really what helpful I,
to go
what
with which, say. Whatever one makes you feel the best and like the most, like
least offensive.
Right. Yes.
Least offensive, most affirming to my specific opinion or ideas. That's the translation I like.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely that. Definitely that. I was going to say, so for like a word for word equivalence, which sometimes can be helpful and interesting, those are, I think, the hardest to read. I like the NET, the New English Translation. And I think there's a website, I'll have to, hopefully I'm right about this, and Molly can put it up on the screen, but there's a website with the NET that's free that has all kinds of like notes of cultural background and stuff. So if you really want to like get stuck into studying it, that's a good one.
What's that one called again, Anna? What'd you say it's called again?
The NET, the New English Translation.
Cool.
Thought for thought, I'm with Scott. I like the NLT, but I also, as a kid, memorized a lot of stuff in the NIV. So those sometimes those are comforting, verses that you memorize as a kid. Like, it's nice to go back and read those psalms or prayers.
Some are. You're right. I feel the same way. Yeah, there's some passages that I want to read them in King James or NIV because they bring back a lot of like feelings.
Yeah,
child hearing the Bible read and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's like a touchstone. Yeah, and then for like paraphrase. Sorry, real quick. Message and then also the voice.
The voice. I love the voice. The voice. What I love about the voice. So that was created by the Ecclesia Bible Society, which a lot of you know Chris C, who's a friend of the Orchard and his organization. But what I love about that is the voice incorporates a lot of really unique features. Almost like a screenplay like formatting for dialogue. It includes like historical explanations within the text, sort of like a built-in commentary. And they use like more descriptive and interpretive language for important terms. So it's like, instead of using the term Christ, which might be less meaningful to some readers, the voice translates that often as like Jesus, the anointed one. Or, I love the John 14:6. We looked at that a couple of weeks ago where Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. The voice translates that I am the path, the truth, and the energy of life. Mm-hmm. I love that. Oh my God.
Yeah, so that's beautiful. Cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. I love that. I think the voice is, their whole intent was to get a bunch of poets and artists involved in it too. They even made a couple records when they were making that too. So I think there's I love this sort of like rethinking of what translation is. And I think that the most helpful thing I'm kind of taking away from this is the variety is really where it's at. And I love, Anna, kind of what you said about the ideal situation is having big old monitor in front of you and having all these different translations open. I know it's a little nerdy to do that, but man, I think that you're right. I think you can get more into the depth and nuance of the original, like content, meaning, context, all that stuff. Thinking about plans, like, and how to approach it. This person also mentioned that they sometimes don't even know where to start. Like, where would you all recommend starting? What's a good, easy starting place?
Well, for sure, Revelation. Song of Solomon. I mean, I would say either one.
I really like the prophets that are only one page long, because then you can be like, I just read a whole book of the Bible.
All the minors.
Shut like that Obadiah. Off. Get in there with Obadiah and be like, one out of 66, done. seriously, I think the Gospels are always a good place to start. I think John is really good. Some of it can be a little confusing, and that's where I think getting into a paraphrase translation is really helpful. If you've literally never read the Bible before,
Which is, those are Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, or the Gospels.
Yeah, Yeah. I think John is really, really good. Yeah. Or Luke, I think, because there's a lot of familiar stories in Luke, like the Christmas story that many of us know, is in Luke. So those are kind of, I recommend.
Yeah, I agree. I think gospel is a good place to start because there, you know, you get the story of the life of Jesus, and it's a good place to start to understand the teachings, and also and then I would say the book of Acts could be a good one because that's like tells the story of the early Christian community and them like wrestling through how to live this thing out and all of that. So Acts would be like, I would say gospels or one of the gospels, and Acts would be good place to start, and then Revelation.
Yeah, and of course, memorize most of it. I think for me, it's like if your goal is to develop a rhythm of reading the scriptures, right? Where I think it's Joshua 1:8 talks about the idea of the book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. This is like the idea is that you're like soaking in it, that you're like you're in it kind of regularly. Mm-hmm. It's not just this like I'm just gonna read through the whole Bible. I think that a goal of like reading the Bible front to back is a great goal, and it's like fun to be able to tell your friends that like, oh yeah, this year I wrote the Bible front to back. It's cool, but I think that there's actually a better and more healthy way to approach it, especially in terms of how we all talked the last like several weeks about reading it literarily. When you read something mm-hmm. literarily, you're going to approach it differently. So there might be even different times of day or a different kind of rhythm that you get into with different types of literature. Mm-hmm. And I thought I'd just run through real quick 6 different big categories of literature that you find in the Bible. And then we've kind of talked a little bit about, but this might help some folks. So there's some of the books are narrative. And the Gospels would mostly be narrative included in that too, but also books like Genesis, Exodus, the book of Acts is narrative, right? Because it's telling a story. There are some books that there are some books that are law and instruction based, right? So think of like Deuteronomy, think of Leviticus. These are books that...
It's my favorite ones.
They're the best, right? There are a lot of like laws and regulations. There's a lot of stuff when you read those into your go like, what is happening here? Why are they telling me I have to like tie up 7 horses outside my house at night when I go to bed? Like it's, that's not an actual thing. I just made that up.
I was going to say, is that a real thing? I don't remember that.
I know. I was like, must have missed that one.
One of my favorites probably it would be wisdom literature. In wisdom literature, Proverbs is the kind of king of wisdom literature. Job, Ecclesiastes is in there, and wisdom literature provides like this deeper sort of guidance, sort of like a spiritual guidance and observations about life. But sometimes from a different mind, so you really got to approach wisdom literature. As very different than obviously narrative or even instruction, because it's speaking not to just hear, but to hear. Poetry is another one. Psalms, obviously lots of poems in there. Lamentations is one that we miss a lot. I don't think that we're very good at lamenting, and man, we could use a little bit of lamentations culturally. The Song of Solomon is poetry, right? And poetry obviously there's a ton of metaphor and symbol. Again, it speaks to a little bit more deeper things than just like here. The prophetic books, you know, books like Isaiah, you mentioned, you know, Revelation is actually one of them, but there's like, within the prophetic books, there's also a couple that are more like apocalyptic prophecy, right? That's which speaks of like the end times or like the unfolding, the like God's plan unfolding. So like Revelation and Daniel will be there, but the prophets like Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, those guys are ones who are people who God had a special sort of connection with, relationship with, and a special message to God's people. Prophecy isn't all just like, hey, let me tell you what's going to happen next. Like, that's fortune telling.
Oh, saith the Lord.
Prophecy is more like I'm bearing a special message. And then, the last one would be the letters, right?
Everybody loves the prophets, epistles. By the way. They usually... Yeah.
They never offended anyone.
No, right.
They made everyone feel really comfortable.
Easy life. Easy life. I mean, you know... Sorry.
They're like the New York Times bestsellers. The last one would be the letters or the epistles, right? So mostly to, in the New Testament, to early church, Paul writing to, you know, the Romans or the Ephesians. You know, you've got these groups of new Christians who are forming, and then you've got the early apostles who are writing to them. And then kind of within that, you could also maybe say the Gospels are their own category in and of themselves, because they sort of contain a few elements of each. Like there's narrative stuff in there. There's some prophecy in the Gospels. So there's you know, thought we'd lay those things out. But I like the idea of being able to approach each of them a little bit differently, and even maybe having a little bit different rhythm with them each.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think reading the Bible through in a year, there's some people that they're wired that way to do that. And I think it's great. But I think like trying to read the Bible through from front to back is not the best way to do that. You know,
yeah,
there's a lot of good Bible reading plans out there that kind of take you through. Like the lectionary, I think, is a great example, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the lectionary is this basically pre-selected collection of readings that. You know, a lot of mainline churches use, Catholic churches, you know, Catholic Church uses. And I think, maybe I'm wrong, I should know this, but after, like, it's in cycles. So you have your A, your B, your C. And by the time you get through that third year, you will have read like 90% of the Gospels and like 70 something percent. Is that right? Is that sound right? Of the New Testament?
Yeah, I don't know what the actual percentage is.
60%. I can't remember.
A lot of the goal behind it, though, is that it's taking you through the major themes, and it's doing it in context of a calendar, which I think hitting these things in seasons is so meaningful. So yeah, lectionary is really beautiful.
And you're doing it alongside millions of other Christians around the world who are also reading these passages and wrestling with them. And that's what I love. Part of the reason I love as a church when we're in a season where we're following the lectionary is that it's not just us. You know, we're doing this along with many others. And the other thing I love about the lectionary is it takes you into some passages that are often ones that we want to try to like kind of avoid, because it's like, what the hell does this mean? Right. But the lectionary pushes you into it, and it's like, no, I think there's a reason that's in there. Let's dive into that and really try to understand
it. Stay with it. Wrestle with it. I'll jump to the next question because it's kind of related. And it's, how do I help my school-aged children read and learn to love the Bible? How do I help my school-aged children? This is a tough one.
Well, I'll tell you what you don't do, because I grew up in a Christian school. don't force them to read it or make it like, you know, the Bible for me became like, oh, it's work. I have to memorize the scriptures. I have to do, like, it was not this book that like, oh, actually I'm wrong. Let me back up. When I was real little and I had like the children's Bible, I would spend hours like just looking at the pictures and reading it. And like, and there was actually this, something about it enticed me. Right. But I think then when it was forced on me, like, you know, then it was like, it sucked the joy and the life out of it in so many ways.
Like anything else, right?
Right. Yeah. Tell me I have to read any book, I'm not going to read it. I want to read what I want to read, and I want to read books that are interesting to me, not that are forced on me, you know?
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, I have a 7-year-old, and she would way rather read her Minecraft book than listen to me read a Bible story to her. And I just have to respect that. That's just... We are all on our own journey. And I think as parents or caregivers, it's really easy to want to control kids. And I think that the first thing we can do to let them unfold in their spiritual journey is let go of that need to control what they're doing, what they're thinking, what they're learning. I think the best thing we can do with kids of any age, and this is true with preschoolers or with teenagers, is have good conversations, just like we've been having in this series, like they've been happening around our tables. And we can, you know, work to make them developmentally appropriate. Like there, I'm not going to tell my 5-year-old the violent stories. To be honest, we haven't even really talked about the crucifixion with either of my children. So they know that Jesus died, but we haven't, you know, going into the graphic, gory details. That's something that, you know, their dad and I have like, we're not, that doesn't feel appropriate to tell them.
You haven't had a family movie night, The Passion of the Christ?
No.
Get the popcorn.
You can't even handle the Little Mermaid. Are you kidding me?
That was a really odd thing. I remember going to the movie theater to watch The Passion of the Christ. There's like people like eating popcorn and drinking their soda. Right. It's like,
this is such a strange.
What in God's name are you doing? Like, this is like,
so in Thailand, many years ago, we found a guy selling pirated DVDs on the sidewalk, and we had Passion of the Christ, and the pirated like jacket of the DVD had like pull quotes on the back, you know, like reviews and stuff that were fake. And one of them was like, Passion of the Christ, absolutely hilarious.
No, oh my God.
I think we might have bought it. I think it
I would have bought it just for that.
That's so great.
Absolutely hilarious. I think with kids, like, we can be developmentally appropriate and just be like, if you have that need of control, and I think lots of us that grew up in that kind of more control-based religious background have that, that there's this expectation that, like, I need to, you know, make sure that my children are doing X, Y, Z. And I think if we do our own inner work and interrogate that, find out, like, why do I have this need? Where is this coming from?
Yeah.
That enables us to have a posture of openness and discussion. So that if my child says to me, I don't think that really happened, that's too weird. Instead of being like, oh no, that I can say, well, you know, it is really weird. Why do you think people told this story? If it is weird, if it is made up, like, let's just, you know, let's let go of my need to be like, no, it's real. Let go of that. Why do you think people told this story? What does the story tell us about God?
That's right.
What does the story tell us about how to love one another or how to love the world? And that's a conversation you can have with a very little child, you know, like, what is this story? Here's a miracle of, I don't know, Jesus feeding 5,000 people. Wow, that's crazy. What does this tell us about God? God loves people and wants them to have food in their bellies.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
You know, and you can have that conversation, I think, at any age level. It just gets more nuanced and detailed. But
And at the end of the day,
you guys think
you're not...
Go ahead.
I said, at the end of the day, our jobs aren't to prove or protect God from anything. Our jobs aren't to protect or prove any sort of particular worldview. So if there's a little bit of fear going into it, like, I know there are some folks who have a lot of fear going, like, I don't know how to talk about the Bible or religious things or spiritual things with my kids. And it's sometimes based out of, like, I feel ill-equipped to, or I got to get a professional to, so let's take them to church and have a pastor do it. You have everything you need to parent your kids. Lean into your inner wisdom. Lean into the love that you have. If love is the starting and end point of the whole thing, there's no failing.
And I would say, too, that there is absolutely nothing wrong with learning alongside your children.
That's good.
Totally.
If you are like, I don't know, admit that. It's fine. You know, we can say we don't know. And we can say, like, should we wonder together? Should we imagine? Maybe we could research together. We could find some books about this.
Turn it into a learning opportunity.
Yes.
So good.
And it's so good for them to see that modeled, especially in this era of misinformation and, like, polarity, learning how to research, learning how to be curious and doing that together. Like, that can be not only a way for them to learn and you to learn, but for you to bond together and just deepen your connection that you have with each other. So,
What a great way, way to model it.
I agree. And I think that the you know, man, we have to remember too, the Bible is not the point of it all. The Bible is not, and never has been, and never will be, the center of the Christian faith. You know, I think we have to remember that, because people can actually become Bible worshipers. Do you know what I mean? Where they actually have this unhealthy relationship with the Bible. And it's like, even though the Bible has been, at least in some form, present since the beginning of Christianity, it's not the central focus of our Christian faith. That position belongs to Christ, right? And I think, like, I don't know who it was, but they said something like, you know, something along the lines of how the Bible's role is to say, let me say it this way. The Bible doesn't say, look at me. What it says is, look through me. Right? So it's like the Bible, if we're paying attention, sort of decenters itself and points to something, you know, greater, which is Christ. And I think that's the thing that we have to remember. So I think even when it comes to our children, or it's like teaching them that the Bible is this beautiful book that I believe that there is a divine thread that is found in the scriptures, something that is beyond human, but it's also mostly a very human book that has so much wisdom and all of these things. But it's not the point. The Bible is not the point of it all. The point is what the Bible points us to.
Yeah, that's great. The point is what the Bible points us to. Yeah, there's one more question here, and I'm looking at our time and realizing we're running low on time. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to wrap up this part of our conversation, and then we're going to continue and have the final question on an offline setting, and then we're going to post it later in the week. So that final question has to do with when you have a family member who wants to defend defend their point of view. How do you approach that person? So we're going to talk about that. You're going to be able to watch it online afterward. But for the sake of our conversation here, I just want to give us each an opportunity to reflect just a moment on what these past 8-10 weeks have looked like and felt like. What maybe kind of new revelations have you uncovered? What have been the highlights for you of these conversations?
I think for me, it's been the conversations that I've been able to have with the Aurora table, at the table gathering that we do. Mm-hmm. There has just been some really beautiful conversation and sharing about people who are coming from really different perspectives that see the Bible differently, who have been able to, rather than like closing down and saying, well, if you think that, then I can't be with you. Opening up and saying, like, you know, things, responding to people sharing with things like, I've never thought about that before. Thank you for sharing your perspective. That helps me understand. That helps me think. And so for me, what I want to take away from this series is just the power of having these conversations in a healthy and safe way, where it's not about being right or wrong. It's not about winning or losing. It's not about being in the in-group or the out-group. It's about being with the people at the table and loving them for who they are and the wholeness of their humanity that comes out.
So, that's good. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. I would say for me, you know, there's been a lot of honest conversation that I've loved being a part of. And, you know, hearing, I think of one individual who at the beginning of the series said something along the lines of, I don't really read the Bible. I'm not interested in the Bible. And a few weeks later was like, you know, actually, I feel kind of motivated to want to dive into the scriptures. And I think this has been a very permission giving series for people to be able to say to them, there's other ways of approaching the Bible. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are. And when you give people permission to approach the scriptures in what I think is a healthier way and more beneficial way, I think there's a real freedom that comes with that. It's I didn't know. I was only taught this approach. Mm-hmm. The other thing I would say that's really resonated with me is this idea, and it's not a new idea, but I think it's something that just as we've spent some time in it and sort of marinated it with this idea that the scriptures are an unfolding story and a reminder of the fact that my life is also an unfolding story. And, you know, the messes that sometimes I feel like there's more mess in my life than not. And, but you know what, that is the scriptures, you know, but it's pointing somewhere. And I think the perspective that brings, not just when you're reading the scriptures, but when you look at your own life is, very freeing for sure.
Yeah. I love that, both that. And honestly, that speaks to me a lot too, Scott. I think that being able to approach the scriptures with that sort of bigger overarching narrative, being able to see that. This was a wonderful reminder for me just the past several weeks of these conversations about what the power that we can access by looking back and to be able to bring it into the now. I think that we can learn so much from all these different types of literature that we're talking about and then bringing them into our present and let it speak to. It's almost like this synchronistic wild thing. It's the thing that like people get all like goosebumps about when they open up the Bible and it lands on like Proverbs 40 or something like that. And it's like, oh my word, that's for me today here. That stuff happens more often than not. And call it what you want. But I think that there's spirit and there's wisdom and there's the inner voice of God that kind of emerges within when we open ourselves to read, especially when we do it together. And it's been really a treat to be able to have those conversations with the two of you and with other folks there at Aurora here in Leavenworth. We've had some meaningful conversations about even what books are included in the Bible and like, you know, the types of voices that we give power to in our lives. I mean, it just doing this kind of work just brings up a lot. And I just feel so grateful to be part of a collective, a community like this, that we can do that together in such a healthy way. One last thing I'll make note of, a couple weeks ago when I was in Illinois there and we were doing the Lectio Divina practice, that was a really special moment. I think doing that with a group of people in a room, walking through it at that pace, even those small chunks, it just felt approachable and it felt like none of us has a voice bigger than the other. And I think the scriptures can do that. They can level the playing field in that way, that we're all accessing this together and we're all learning together. And I just think it's a really beautiful thing to do together with people. So thank you all for your contributions and being honest in your stories. And appreciate it all.
Thank you for sure.
Yep.
Well, thank you both. And we'll continue. We're excited about this next series that's coming up. You're going to hear a little bit more about that later.
Me too. I'm excited about it.
It's going to be fun.
Thank you, Anna and Scott. You know, as we reflect on these last several weeks of conversations about the Bible, we want to offer a few questions for you to ponder on your own, perhaps in a journal and reflection, or with your table gathering or family or friends that are nearby in conversation. First, what have been some helpful rhythms for you to engage with the Bible on a regular basis? You know, you heard a little bit about us talking about translations and other ways, you know, what books are helpful and starting points. What have been your starting points? Are there certain books or translations or reading plans that you have found helpful in your journey? Second, what's been your experience teaching children and young people to engage with the Bible and other sacred texts and to have wholehearted conversations? And then finally, what is it this past 8 weeks, 9 weeks, no, 10 weeks that you are taking from these conversations? How have you been impacted? Where were you challenged? Now, where were times that our conversations together might have pushed you forward or nudged you a certain direction or been hard for you to listen to or be part of? What new perspectives might have even shifted your thinking a little bit? What are you taking away from all this? I'd love to share that. Just reflect yourself and share with others. In addition, we wanted to share a few resources to help you on your continued journey of engaging with the scriptures. There are so many resources out there. So these are just a few that we recommend that we say, oh yeah, these get our little stamp of approval. One, you hear us talk about Richard Rohr all the time, but his book called Things Hidden is great. So check that out, a deep dive into being able to read the scriptures from just a beautiful perspective. Also in the Richard Rohr family, there's the Center for Action and Contemplation. If you're not subscribed to their daily meditations, that's a great place to have like just a daily rhythm. There's a team of writers that do those, and there's typically some scripture reference in there, and it's just a great place to just engage with it on a daily basis. There's a book called A Year with Thomas Merton, Daily Meditations from His Journals, that I'd also highly recommend. And then here's another one of my personal favorites called The Divine Hours by Phyllis Tickle. The Divine Hours is, it's actually a series. This is a volume that is for summertime. It goes by the week. It goes by the days. It goes like, it's very calendar based. It takes you through the scriptures. There are prayers in here. There are scriptures to contemplate. It's just been such a lifeline for me for so many years. And then lastly, I'll mention an app called Our Bible app. It's a newer app, and the creators of this app intended it to be an inclusive and just open-hearted way of approaching the Bible, kind of free from a lot of this sort of toxic and divisive theology that you sometimes can find in some more mainstream Christian media. So Our Bible app, go check that out. They've got some like reading plans and link to all sorts of other resources. Now, there are just a few things I wanted to share with you before we conclude today. Now, first, since we've just finished our conversation series called Rethinking the Bible, I'm really excited to share with you about what is coming next for The Orchard. Now, if you've been connecting with us for any period of time, you'll probably know that creativity isn't just something that we think of as something that painters and musicians do, but that creativity for a lot of us is just a way of life. It's a way that helps us to connect with the divine wisdom within and bring out something that is good and beautiful and healing for the world around us. And that the creative process is this place where you and I get to be formed as human beings, challenged to live life with humility and curiosity and receptivity to spirit. Because creativity, it's not just for those of us who call ourselves artists. It's a way of being in the world, and it's a way of being that really is life-giving and gives you access to a full way of life and living. So whatever role that you might find yourself in during this season, whatever role you currently play in life, whether you create by leading a business or a community or a team, or whether you create by leading your family, or maybe you're a student and you're just now learning about your own curiosities, we truly believe that you have something unique and beautiful inside you that the world needs now, something that's meaningful right now to bring. And so we want to help you do that. Take whatever steps that we can to help you take those steps toward a life of creative living right now. So over the course of the next several weeks, we're going to be doing a conversation series called Here to Create. And in that conversation series, we're going to be chatting with a bunch of our friends, creative individuals, people from musicians and visual artists to entrepreneurs and innovators. And our hope through the whole thing, through all these conversations, is to inspire you and challenge you and help affirm the creativity in each of us, giving us some real practical tools for what it means to live a creative life, live a full life, tap into that creativity and bring it to the world. We really hope that you'll join us on this journey. I think it's going to be a blast. You can join us either in our weekly digital liturgies that run at 11 a.m. on Sundays or during table gatherings in your local community. Or you can also catch up with us by listening to our podcast, which is going to be, I think, probably especially great for those of you who might be traveling a lot this summer, like my family. And for those of you who live in the Aurora, Illinois area, we're going to be kicking off this series with a live in-person gathering at Society 57 in downtown Aurora on Sunday, July 9th at 11 a.m. And we really hope that if you're anywhere in that area, you'll be able to join us there. And then for everyone else, tune in next week to our digital liturgy or catch our Orchard Conversations podcasts. Got it? We're so excited about Here to Create and to go on that journey with you over these next several weeks. I want to take just a minute and say thank you so much for those of us who have been supporting the work that we're doing. As you probably know, The Orchard isn't supported by any kind of outside organization. We don't run ads or anything like that. None of this actually happens without people like you who are benefiting in some way from the work that we're doing and connecting with us. So we really, especially during these summer months when people are kind of traveling and all over the place, consistency really means a lot to us. It helps us continue to create this work on a weekly basis. And so we really feel it. Any gift that you're able to give, we really feel it. And we want to say thank you for that. If you would like to give, if you are feeling generous in heart and want to say yes to what we're doing, we invite you to do that in a few ways. The easiest way is to go to theorchardcommunity.com/give. You can set up recurring giving there. It makes it a really easy way to do it. You could also mail a check to us at P.O. Box 7688, Aurora, Illinois, 60507. Or you can download our app called The Orchard. You can search for The Orchard Aurora in the App Store and either platform. And those are just a few ways, but just genuinely want to say thank you for those of you who continue to support us. Really, really feel it, and it's meaningful. Now, earlier, you heard us mention that we're going to be posting a bonus episode of our podcast this week. And while we were recording that conversation, Scott brought this quote to us that just floored us. It's a quote from Brian Zahn, who's an author, and man, his quote just really, really resonated, just hit on the head so much of what we've been chatting about the past several weeks. It's kind of a long little passage. It's about 3 or 4 minutes long. But I thought this would be a great way for us to close our time together. And we're going to leave you with that clip today. And I encourage you then to go later this week and check out that full bonus episode that we'll be posting later this week. But I'll turn it over to Scott now for that.
It's a story. We're telling news here, keeping alive an ancient epic. The grand narrative of paradise lost and paradise regained. The greatest once upon a time tale ever told. The beautiful story which moves relentlessly toward they lived happily ever after. Never, never, never forget that before it's anything else, it's a story. So let the story live and breathe, enthrall and enchant. Don't rip out its guts and leave it lifeless on the dissecting table. Don't make it something it's really not. A catalog of wished-for promises, an encyclopedia of God facts, a law journal of divine edicts, a how-to manual for do-it-yourselfers. Find the promises, learn the facts, heed the laws, live the lessons, but don't forget the story. Learn to read the book for what it is, God's great, big, wild, and wonderful surprise-ending love story. Let there be wonder, let there be mystery, let there be tragedy, let there be heartbreak, let there be suspense, let there be surprise. Let it be earthy and human, let it be celestial and divine. Let it be what it is, and don't try to make it perfect for where it's not. This fantastic story of creation and alienation, devastation, incarnation, salvation, restoration, with its cast of thousands, more Tolstoy novel than thousand-page sermon. It's a story because we are not saved by ideas, but by events. Here's a plot line for you: death, burial, and resurrection. Yet it's a story, not a plan, not ology or ism, but a story. And it's an amalgamated patchwork story told in mixed medium: narration, history, genealogy, prophecy, poetry, parable, song, sermon, dream and vision, memoir and letter. So understand the medium and don't try so hard to miss the point. Try to learn what matters and what doesn't. It's not where and when Job lived, but what Job learned. In his painful odyssey and poetic theodicy, it's not about how many cubits of water you need to put Everest under a flood, but why the world was so dirty that it needed such a big bath. Trying to find Noah's Ark instead of trying to rid the world of violence really is an exercise in missing the point. Speaking of missing the point, it's not did a snake talk, but what the freaking thing said, because even though I've never met a talking snake, I'm sure I've had serpentine thoughts crawl through my head. Literalism is a kind of escapism by which you move out of the crosshairs of the probing question, but parable and metaphor have a way of knocking us to the floor. Prose flattened literalism makes the story small, time confined and irrelevant, but poetry and allegory travel through time and space to get in our face. Inert facts are easy enough to set on the shelf, but the story well told will haunt you. Ah, the story well told. That's what is needed. It's time for the story to bust out of the cage and take the stage and demand a hearing once again. It's a story, I tell you, and if you allow the story to seep into your life so that the story begins to weave into your story, that's when, at last, my friend, you're reading the Bible right.